Simon Sadi Zayin, which can be done hopefully in one shir. We'll see. I think we might get it done in terms of learning the basis of the halacha and the contemporary applications of the halacha. Of course, the topic is baking dairy bread and eating dairy bread. The sugya is not a sugya in Maseches Chulin. It is a sugya in Maseches Psachim. Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara Maseches Psachim tells us Aim loshin esaisa bechalav, that one is not allowed to knead dough with milk, v'im losh, and if you do so, kol hapas asura, mipehergel avera, the entire bread is going to be asur, based on the fact that it is likely going to lead you to do an avera. So the Rashi explains what kind of avera. Because you'll come to eat meat together with that bread, and that's the hergel avera that it's going to come to. That since bread is a staple at every meal, whether it be a meat meal or a dairy meal, if you have a bread that is dairy, it is very likely that you're going to come to eat that bread with meat. Why is this in Maseches Pesachim? So the Gemara is talking about the sugya of matzah ashira, and how you're not supposed to make matzah with anything but flour and water, certainly matzah for the mitzvah. So if you add in other liquids instead of just water, so that's what we call matzah ashira. So it was discussing if you're making matzah with milk mixed in. So that's in that context. The Gemara says, what are you talking about, matzah with milk mixed in? That's aser. It would be not kosher the whole year. Forget about Pesach. It's always aser. So that's the halacha, that's the Braisa in Maseches Pesachim. However, the Gemara goes on to say, Ke'ein Tura Shari, that if you make it Ke'ein Tura, then it's going to be Mutter. What does Ke'ein Tura mean? What is this special heter of Ke'ein Tura? So Rashi writes, Ke'ein Tura Ma'at. Ke'ayin Shal Shar. Tura means Shar. Ke'ein means ke'ayin, like the eye of. So how do you make dairy bread in a way that it is permissible? Make it so tiny that it's like the eye of an ox. Then it's mutar lalush b'chalav. Why? Says Rashi, because you'll eat it right away. You'll eat it on the spot. You're not going to have time to forget that it's milchig. So it's unlikely to lead you to a situation where you're having milchig bread as you know, with a pastrami sandwich. It's unlikely that that's going to happen because it's such a small amount. You can eat it very quickly and before you have time to forget that it is, in fact, dairy bread. That is Rashi. How small is small, right? Rashi does not tell us that, but if you look in Sif Aleph over here in Yerodeya, so the Mechaber and Ramah seem to disagree about that, about how small is. Because if you look in the Mechaber, in Simin Tzadi Zayin, if you look in the Mechaber, in Simin Tzadi Zayin, the Mechaber writes, Ein lash nisa b'chal of shami yavel achle and basar. V'im lash kalapas asra afil lechle v'vada. V'im haya dover muat, and here he defines, kidei achila b'bas achas. The amount that you would eat at one meal, the amount that you would eat at one time, one serving of bread. That's how small is. But then the Rama adds, v'lechein noagin lolush pas im chalav b'chag ha-shavuos and gam b'shum on the covered Shabbos. He calls an mechshev kedavar muat. That if you make it for the yantav of Shavuos, if you make it for Shabbos, that's also considered to be a davar muat. So that is those are the two days that the Rama seems to say could be an amount that would be consumed over a full day, like the yantav of Shavuos or the full day of Shabbos, and even that's considered a davar muat. Whereas the mechaber sounds like saying one serving, one sitting, you're going to eat it. What if you might need very little bread, but you have 12 children, and between all of you, you're going to be eating a lot of bread? So how do we measure one sitting or even one day? Is it one sitting in terms of what a single individual would eat? Or is it one sitting what that family would eat? So the Aruch HaShulchan over here in Sif Dalid points out that if you have a large family, you're allowed to bake enough for the entire family to eat in whatever that amount of time is. The Mechaber, one sitting, and the Ramah, one day. So if you happen to have, 12 kids, so then it could be a lot of bread that you bake at once, because the food goes much, much quicker, obviously, when you have a lot of children. Good, that is all Rashi. Rashi understood that Ke'en Tura, the special heter of Ke'en Tura, is about size, the size of the eye of an ox. Who disagrees with Rashi? The Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Machlokes Asuros, Perek Tes Halacha Chaf Beis, the Rambam writes the Halacha that Ein Lashon Yisa B'chala V'im Lash Kalapas Asurim Nehergal Aveira, Shema Yochav Abasa, right, the same Halacha. And then he says, V'im Shina B'tsuras Hapas, Ad Shetia Nikeres, Kedei Shelo Yochav Ba, Lo Basa V'lo Chalav, Hareza Mutter. That if you change the shape of the bread, the Tsuras Hapas, to make it so easily recognizable that it's different and that this is not regular bread, then you're allowed to make a milchik bread. The Rambam allows you to bake even a very large amount of dairy bread as long as you change the shape of the bread. The change in the shape is a sign that the bread is dairy and you'll remember not to eat it with meat. So there is a machlokas haposkim, just like we had within the Shita of Rashi, when Rashi said it means small, so we said, how small is small? So then the Rambam, you have to ask the question,
what's that?
Yeah, how strange is strange, right? How different is different, right? How does the bread have to be made differently? So there is a machlokas haposkim, just how unusual the shape of the bread has to be in order to meet this qualification. So in the Darkei Tshuva, in Os Yotes, the Munkacher points out that most of the poskim do not directly and clearly discuss this issue. It's oddly missing from early poskim, but he thinks that if you're medayek in the Chachmas Adam, it seems that the Chachmas Adam holds that it has to be different enough that an outsider, someone visiting from another town, will immediately, and who doesn't know what bread looks like in your city, will immediately say, well, that's weird. Right, meaning that's strange. So that's the Darkei Tshuva quotes from the Chachmas Adam that if you that it has to be strange enough that even if someone who's not from here were to see this bread, he would say this can't be the normal bread of this town. Meaning maybe you go to Italy and you see Italian bread and that looks a little bit different than like American white bread, but you know that's within range. You know, so no one would think that that's so weird. But Ke'en Tura has to be a very highly unusual looking bread. The Chavos Da'as is quoted in Pesachei Tshuva over here in Sivkat and Gimel, where the Chavos Da'as says, no, if you're only baking for your own family, so you're not a baker, you're baking for your own family, then you only need to bake it differently than the bread you normally bake for your own family. So if normally the only bread you bake is braided challahs, so good, so now don't make a braided challah, make something else, make a different shape of bread. It doesn't have to be this highly unusual shape. The Chachmas Adam says that any stranger is going to look at it and say, oh, that's so weird. No, it could be anything, as long as people who are going to be consuming it, who you're planning on having consuming it, would notice that it's strange. Obviously, this is for commercial purposes. Then you'll need to do, like the Chachmas Adam, that whoever the consumer is going to notice its strangeness.
Does it need to be a change in the actual baking of the bread, or can you bake it normally?
We'll get there. In Israel, you may or may not have noticed that there's a very popular food in Israel called berekas. Yeah? So a bereka in Israel may be filled with cheese, or it may be filled with potato. If it's filled with potato, what they'll often do, especially at a chasm or something, is they'll pour meat sauce over it. There's some sort of gravy that was cooked with meat. Yeah, you've seen. So if you ever go into a bakery in Israel, the potato berekas are always square and the cheese berekas are always triangles. Ever notice that? Cheese berekas are always triangles, potato berekas are always square. And the reason for that is there's so much halacha built into culture. In Israel, the reason for that is halacha. It's based on this, because Israeli berekas are served during formal meals. They're served at chasanas and dinners and whatever. So if the cheese berekas would be baked in a square shape, we're worried that the same concern that you might accidentally eat it with meat. So all the bakeries with a hechsher in Israel shape the cheese berekas into triangle and the potato berekas into squares, and that's explained by poskim write about this. If you look in there's a tshuva sefer. Rav Grossman in Shalos Tshuvos v'Darashta v'Chakarta. Chelikei Yerdeya Simen Lamed Gimel Os Aleph, where he explains this exact issue, and he says that it's done b'kavana. He says, "Hare yesh barakas shel tapuchei adama sheshaper ochel nosam im basar v'mayosim barakas kavina ba'osot tzura v'kala kavina mechusa b'batzek hare enin ikeres." If you were to make cheese barakas and they were to be covered in dough, the same way the potato barakas are covered in dough, the cheese would be covered in dough, and you wouldn't know the difference from looking at the outside. That would be a problem. It has to be something that's recognizable. I was just listening. Someone sent me a clip from a shiur Rav Nissen Kaplan gave recently. Rav Nissen, you know who Rav Nissen Kaplan is? Yes. So he was a Rebbe in the mirror for many years. Now he has his own yeshiva. What? Yeah, I forgot what it's called, but he has his own yeshiva now. So he's a fascinating person. Just a lot of fun to listen to. Very Leibnik personality. Big Talmud Chacham. He has great stories with Rav Shlomo Zalman or whatever. Very fascinating person. So Rav Nissen, unfortunately, lost his wife a couple of years ago. He's not an old man. He's, I don't know, in his late 50s maybe. And his wife passed away last year or 2 years ago. And he was telling over the Maisa that the day that his wife died, when they came back from the hospital to the house to prepare for the Levaya, Levaya, I guess, was going to be that night, his children started, preparing a meal for him to eat, and they started putting together all sorts of weird foods, like these little berekas and things, and he's like, "What are you guys doing? Like, your mother just died, like, what are we worried about these strange foods?" And his kid said, "No, Abba, these are all the foods you refuse to eat all the time because it's a suffik brachas. Now you're an oni, so now you can taste these foods." That's what the kids were thinking of. Pretty fascinating, no? Okay, anyway, that was the story that he told. Anyway, the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Aleph, Paskin's like what? Like Rashi or like the Rambam? True question, right, both. That bread that was baked with milk or with meat is asur to eat, even by itself, unless it's made in very small quantities, right? Or was made of an unusual shape that's unique and different than other loaves of bread in that town. And in fact, Rama points out that was the minhag, that they would make milchig bread in honor of Shavuos, that they would make meat bread in honor of Shabbos, and as long as it's a unique shape or small size, that's good enough. And the Rama defines small size as just enough to last you for Shabbos. So that's the psak in the Shulchan Aruch, that either one of these heterim work independently, meaning it's not necessarily machlokas Rashi and the Rambam, because over here the issue is a chashash. So either one addresses the chashash. Having it in small quantities addresses the chashash. You're not going to come to eat it with meat, and having it in a unique shape addresses the chashash. So comes along the Pisachei Tshuva and Sifkat and Beis, and he says that even if you accidentally baked milchig bread, you didn't know that it was also a lot of people that they they saw some recipe online for bread and like, "Oh, all the ingredients are kosher, so looks delicious," and they'll bake a milchig bread, and sometimes we'll catch it because I'll get the shaila, am I supposed to be mafresh challah from a milchig bread, or can I use a milchig bread, a bread with cheese in it, kneaded into the dough for lechem mishnah on Shavuos? Questions like that, we have to say, wait a second, you're not allowed to bake milchig bread. What? You're not allowed to bake milchig bread? Like, people don't know. They don't know that there's such a halacha that exists. So a person doesn't know, when they bake milchig bread, the bread would need, Pisachei Tshuva points out, you need to get rid of the bread. If it wasn't in small quantities, it didn't have a unique shape. Comes along the Hagos Zer Zohav, and he writes, even though you didn't know that it was Asr, it's Asr. Why don't you say, don't make a knas on a person if they didn't know? And normally, if someone does something b'shogeg, we're not going to make a knas on someone who does something b'shogeg. What's the answer? It's not a knas. We're not punishing you. It's a gzeva. We're concerned that if you have this bread around, it's going to lead to problems. No one's getting punished. It's a gzeira. It's not a knas. You elamitam gzeira shemiyavol yochla and basar v'lo shayich lechalik b'zeh bein mezid bein shogeg. With the gzeira, there's no distinction between mezid and shogeg. You have to be choshesh. You're going to come to eat it with meat. There was a mice in the OU a little while back where there was a major bread company that was under OU certification, was a major client. The OU made a lot of money off of this bread company, and they wanted to start making milchig breads. And they approached the OU with different types of shapes and whatever and things that they hoped would pass. At the time, Rabbi Belsky was still alive. And so they showed all the shapes and the pictures of what they had in mind to Rabbi Shechter and Rabbi Belsky, neither of them were happy with it. They just didn't think it was weird enough. They didn't think it was an unusual enough shape. They didn't think, they thought it was all problematic. So the company asked the OU to at least just write a letter. Don't put an OU on it. At least write a letter. All ingredients of this product are kosher. So what would you do? Right, so the OU, Rabbi Gersten, who's like the right-hand man of Rabbi Shechter and was of Rabbi Belsky, he's like the guy at the OU that knows everything. He's like, he's a big bucky in Hilchos Kashrus. Rabbi Gersten said, we could technically write the same letter about a cheeseburger, you know, but like that doesn't all ingredients are kosher, but that doesn't help. So they refused. They would not write such a letter. The company said, if you don't write this letter, we're going to leave the OU. They said, Gesundheit, hey, goodbye, good riddance. They ended up staying with the OU. Okay. There is a chakira. There's a basic chakira over here that Rav Soloveitchik pointed out. This relates to what Johnny was asking about. Is the isser of milchik bread, is the isser of milchik bread an isser of that Chazal declared milchik bread a cheftza of machalos asuros, that just like pig is asur, behemoth is asur, nevel is asur, treif is asur, this is a cheftza shel isur, it's a cheftza of machalos asuros, or is it only an isur on the gavra lest he violate an isur? That it's a concern, that we're concerned that you violate an isur. As long as you take care of that concern, then you have an isur. So, meaning, we know why, we know the motivation of Chazal in making the isur. Question is, how do they formalize the gzeira? How do they formulate the gzeira? Did they formulate the gzeira in such a way that they're saying, this is treif? Or did they say, you cannot eat bread in a way that risks eating milch and bread with a flesh and meal? So it's a question of how they formulated the gzeira. Now there is a broader discussion in general whether Yisurim Drabbanan can ever be an Isser Cheftza, right? That's the famous comment of the Nesivos, where the Nesivos suggests that all the, not in so many words, but he essentially suggests that all Yisurim D'Oraisa are Yisurei Cheftza and all Yisurei Drabbanan are Yisurei Gavra, because Isser Cheftza means that you're taking that Cheftza and you're declaring it to have inherent characteristics of Isser. The Rabbanan simply don't have that kind of power to take something that's in the Bria and say this has inherent characteristics of anything. What they can do is they can tell you what to do. They can tell me what to do. They can say, you don't eat that. Okay, a din in the Gavra, I can't eat that. Who can make something with inherent characteristics of Isser? Only the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Yisurim D'Oraisa says in Yisurim Cheftza, Yisurim D'Rabbanan, Yisurim Gavra. That's why the Nesiva suggests that if a person violates Nisur D'Rabbanan B'Shogeg, he does not require any kapara whatsoever, because the whole Isser of every Isser D'Rabbanan is you cannot rebel against the Rabbanan. Well, if you did it B'Shogeg, you didn't rebel against anybody, and therefore no kapara is necessary. But leaving aside that Nesivas, Rav Soloveitchik suggests it's possible that the way the Rabbanan formulated this Gezeira is that they made this Macholos Asuras. They made it a Cheftza of Macholos Asuras. We'll see the Nafkaminas in a moment, but first.
Why would Chazal formulate a Gezeira in like a stricter way to say that, or this is Asur, like a low plug, as opposed to like explaining their reason?
Maybe they wanted to make it like a low plug. Exactly. They didn't want people playing games and trying to figure out, and everyone's going to have their own cheshbon of how it's not going to really be a concern by me. You know, I'll put an OUD on the bag and that will be good enough, you know, things like that. So just make it a low plug across the board.
Is this just the same chilek that the stepper had in Machlokes and Ramah
that you have similar chilukim. Over there, a little bit similar. Also, we'll see another similarity. So similar.
It's stopping you from just cutting it or cutting the edges off a little bit in a way where it makes it obvious.
So that's part of the issue over here. I mean, can you do that? Right? So let's see. So the first possible nafkamina over here, there are going to be a few. The first possible nafkamina is, can you be mevatel milchig in dough l'chachila? Can you put less than shishim of milk into your dough? It's not going to have tam milchig at all. So the Sefer Atze Ola, one of the Achronim, the Sefer Atzei Ola says that if you mix milk into your dough, he writes, "Im nishba chalav le'isa ve'in ba shishim kenegda, mutu lahagdil es shi'uro kedei levatel." If milk poured into your dough, and you realize, now I have a milchik dough, you could just make more dough till it gets to the point where it's mevatel the milk. I ain't mevatel nisa l'chachila. Over here it's only gezeira, so over here there's not going to be a violation of ein mevatel nisul chachila. The Chuvus Maharit goes a step further. Chuvus Maharit Chelik Beis Simin Yudches writes, even the chachila, you could pour a little bit of milk into your dough in a way that it's not going to be nosing tam and be so mech on the bittel that it's going to be batel b'shishim, because you can't say in vadnas of the chachila, because there is no iser. There's no shame iser on the dough. That's what the Chuvus Maharit says even further. Now, if you look in the Nachlas Tzvi, on the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch over here in Yardes, and in Sadi Zayin, Nachlas Tzvi argues that you could distinguish, you know, I mean, the arguments say that you're not allowed to do it is, you're not allowed to put a little bit of milk into your chicken soup, right? So why would you be allowed to put a little bit of milk into your bread? They're both Yisurim D'Rabbanan. So Nachlas Tzvi points out that you could distinguish between milk poured into chicken soup and milk poured into dough. When enough milk is poured into chicken soup, the soup will be definitively not kosher. You could pour all the milk in the world into your dough, and it's not necessarily going to be not kosher. Why is it not necessarily going to be not kosher? You could just make it in a weird shape, and then it's going to become mutter. So you can't refer to the dough as an iser. You can't call it an iser, that it's a violation of Eid Mevatlin, iser l'chachila. In Gilyon Marsha, Gilyon Marsha was written by not the Marsha. Who's Gilyon Marsha? Of Shlomo Eger. On the side of the Shulchan Aruch, in his notes on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, he says that it's also to be mevatel a bit of milk into the dough. The OU paskins this way, the chachil, that you're not allowed to intentionally add milk into the dough. They don't allow their companies to do so, even if it's going to be batel. But if milk accidentally fell into the dough, so then there is bittul b'shishim, obviously. If there would be bittul b'shishim by flesh, then there's going to be bittul b'shishim by dough. It could be argued that the issue of invaltness of the chachila is a bigger issue, but there is a question whether invaltness of the chachila is the business of the hashkacha company. Meaning, if I'm the OU or the OK or the Chaf K or whatever, right? I'm supervising some plant. I'm supervising some company. So they may have a small dvar iser, but it's less than shishim and it's not detectable in the taste of the product. So from a Yoredeya perspective, that food is kosher, right? It's batel. You're going to tell me, no, it's not, because ein mevatel nisr l'chachila. You're not allowed to go and be mevatel nisr on purpose. And they are being mevatel the isr on purpose. They're putting it in there on purpose. So the Badei HaShulchan says, exactly, and that's why you're not allowed to give hashkacha if they're mevatel isr. You could argue, Rabbi Sablowski, I heard, argued this way. I don't think as a practical matter that he's advising hashkacha agents to do this, but at least theoretically, you could argue that bittul isr l'chachila, if you were to call the company and say, I have a great product idea. I want you to make this food, and here's what you got to do, and this is, and then put in a little bit of chazer shmelz, but not enough to detect the taste, just whatever, right? And so that, even though you're not the one doing it, but you're instructing the company, and then you're going to give your hashkacha on it, that's a mevatel nisr l'chachila. But that's not what happens. What happens is a company has a product, and they say, here's our product, here are the ingredients, what say you? Is it kosher or not? And if it's kosher, can you stamp an OU on it? So they're not doing it with your approval. They're doing it because that's their product. They're doing it because that's what they make. And therefore, one could argue that it's not a violation of ein mevatel nisr l'chachila. Every hashkacha agency worth anything is machmir on this issue. That we assume that we do not allow a davar asur to enter into the plant. It's not allowed in the building. If you have chazer shmelz, you know, big canister of chazer shmelz, don't worry, it's going to all be bottled. No way, you shut down the whole plant. They wouldn't allow it. The argument could be, first of all, it's dangerous, you know, that it could get to a point where there are a lot of exceptions to bittul b'shishim, davaram mayimid, and there are just a lot of things, you know, milstav yidil taima, there are a lot of exceptions to that, so you just don't want to play games. It's dangerous to play games with that. And also, a lot of times, it's not the way Rabbi Sablowski describes, where the company comes and says, this is our product, take it or leave it. A lot of times, they'll say, this is our product, what can we do with it to make it kosher? and they might say, look, you know, those cookies with the chocolate filling on the inside, they're delicious and they're kosher, but no one's going to be able to have them for a Shabbos party in Shabbos afternoon if they stay milchiks. So maybe figure out a way to make them parv. And you know what they'll do? They'll get, you know, the frum community will write some sort of angry, petition, right? And they'll say, this is the worst thing that's happened to the Jewish people. You know, first the Inquisition, then the Holocaust, and now milch and cookies. And they'll, they'll write this, and you know what? The company will change the product sometimes. They'll actually make the Dunkaroos kosher. They'll whatever it is. They're gonna change. They might change the product. So it is. They are taking direction from to a certain extent from the company. So no hashgacha relies on this. So just keep in the back of your mind. We had a chakira so far. We didn't plug it in yet. We had a chakira. Is it a cheftza of machalos asuros? Or is it an Isra and the Gavra don't do something lest that will likely lead to violation of an Isra? So far, one Machlokas HaPoskim. Machlokas HaPoskim, is there an Indian of a Mevatlan Isra L'Chachila when it comes to putting milk in a dough?
If the whole point of Shishin is that Mevatlan is his, then why would anybody ever want to put milk?
Okay, there are reasons. I guess, yeah. Oh,
so
texture.
Going back to the rush then, doesn't that make it artificial then if there are reasons?
Not necessarily. Yeah.
The argument you made that it's a separate that in the Vatlin Lukatchila is from the OU standpoint, like it would be a separate Isser, and it's like it's not your problem if they're doing it Lukatchila. It doesn't affect the product.
It actually does, because if you violate any Vatlin Lukatchila, then you're not allowed to eat it.
So if you go to someone's house and you know what they did.
That they were mevatel on this one purpose,
can't eat it.
Yeah. For Misha mevatel b'shvila, they were mevatel it for you. Yeah.
According to the opinions that say that it's not doesn't count as the imvatel and ishvach because it's only zero, but what if the whole reason for the zero is that we're worried that somebody's going to eat it? So then, eat with bread, with meat. So and if they were mevatel l'chachila, and then somebody goes into the bread, from a prayer, they were mevatel l'chachila.
You're not even allowed to eat this plain. You're not allowed to eat milchik bread plain.
What does it mean? Right. If we're saying that we're mevatel l'chachila,
Let's wait till it comes back to the chakira, because we're going to go in circles a lot till we bring it back. Machlokas so far, chakira one machlokas, good. Machlokas number two. Let's say you already made your bread and it looks like a normal loaf of bread, but now you want to shape it in an unusual way. You'll cut it, you know, like they make like ice sculptures. You'll make a sculpture of your bread. It will look like a guy milking a cow or something. Bread in the shape of a guy milking a cow. So it will be evident that it's milchig bread. Or you'll make bread that's in the shape of a steak. So everyone will see that it's a fleishig of bread. Are you allowed to do that after the bread was originally made? You know, fun with food. You know, you'll have an activity. So are you allowed to do that after the bread was already made? So there is a machlokas I'm posting about this as well. That once bread has been baked and as normal and sizable bread, reshaping it cannot be matirit. Reshaping it afterwards doesn't change it. Rav Moshe says that the fix that to the bread always has to be done before the baking begins. There's a sefer called Mesoris Moshe. They have three volumes of like a Piskei Halacha Bal Peh that Rav Moshe gave to people. It's not as authoritative, certainly, as Igros Moshe, which is his own tshuvas. But in Mesoris Moshe, they said that Rav Moshe was very much against the idea of saying that that milk and bread could be okay as long as you put an OUD on the package. Because it's true, it was trafe when it came out of the oven, but now you're making a hacker. So the hacker might be the D on the package. No. Once it's trafe when it comes out of the oven, that's it. There's no koshering it afterwards. Right? Belsky said that when the bread was baked by a non-Jew, even the Chavos Das would agree that it could be baked in large quantities and then distributed in small quantities. That's similar to the opinion of Rishonim, who assume that the Yisra of Chalavakum only applies when the milk is in a Jew's possession. I mean, like if a non-Jew milks a cow and then he makes cheese from the milk, aside from the Yisra of Kvinas Akum, there should be an Yisra of Chalav Akum. So a number of the Rishonim say, no, Chalav Akum is only when a Jew has it. a Jew has chalav shechal v'akum, but when it's still by the guy, then it doesn't begin the process of chalav akum. Okay, we're not going to get into that right now. So, but you could say in a similar way that the gzeira against milchik bread only takes effect once the bread is in a Jew's possession, the maximum quantity. So you could have a case where a guy is baking a ton of bread, but he's going to sell it in small packages. So a Jew will only buy it once it's in small packages. Right? Belsky thought that that's okay, that you're allowed to do that. Meaning, you can kasher it afterwards, but not a Jew. A Jew can't kasher it afterwards. Meaning if a Jew baked a large amount, that's a chefetz shel iser. But the iser only begins once a Jew takes possession. So if at the moment a Jew takes possession, he's taking possession of a tiny amount, so Belsky thought that that would be mutter. And he defined the tiny amount as four rolls per bag. Meaning if you're selling challah rolls, right, and you have a non-Jewish company that's making challah rolls, so they can make an enormous amount of challah rolls, but they have to package it in such a way where it's only four rolls per bag, and then a Jew is allowed to buy it because that's a small enough quantity that he's going to remember that it is dairy. That's quite a chiddush. Rabbi Belsky was very much against the sale of milchik bread in larger quantities. The Chachmas Adam disagrees with this whole thing. Chachmas Adam in the Aruch HaShulchan say that in the Shasar Chak, you could take an already usur bread and kasher it. How do you kasher it? Two ways. Either reshape it or make it smaller, cut it up into smaller pieces, and distribute it into smaller pieces, and that's perfectly fine. So even though the bread was originally usur, it can become mutter. Rabbi Yonis Naipschitz, in the crazy place, see over here, in Sadi Zayin, he writes, Vishamati shezikni avi imi hagon hamaforsim moreno rav rav leib tzuntz zal. He said, I heard that my illustrious maternal grandfather, hora bepas shezova tachtav chalav, he paskined about bread that milk had flowed underneath the bread. Someone spilled milk and went underneath the bread. Shekulo aser, that the whole thing is aser. Vitziva lechalkam lebatim lekol balbayis kikar echad. So he gave an idea. Don't make it all. Don't leave. Don't just throw the whole thing out. Cut it up and distribute to all your neighbors. A portion to each neighbor. Wow. He says, why should be, if I'm allowed to bake a small amount, why can't I take a large amount that's been baked and distribute a small amount to each person? So Bjorn Snipschitz quotes that was his grandfather's shita. And it would seem that the same is true by adding a simen after the bread was already baked. And the reason to be makel is because dairy bread is only us unless you come to eat it with meat. But by adding any sort of sign on it or smaller quantity, it's going to be mutter. And then he says, the Rabbi Anderson Eibschitz himself says, that you can rely on his grandfather's sack, but only if you have another sniff lahakel. You can't use it on its own. You need some other tzad lahakel. And the Ben Ishchai is mechadesh, that dairy bread can be sold in small quantities, even if it's baked in large quantities also. The Rabbi Anderson Eibschitz would say, another sniff lahakel might even mean a sniff lahakel, meaning if you smell butter on the bread. Like that was a play on words. But if the bread smells like butter, so then there's less of a chashash that anyone's going to come to eat it with meat because you know it has a milchiga smell to it.
Those who said that you can just make it smaller,
Pasha's
make it smaller and make it look different also?
Pasha's not, right? Same issue. Can you kasher it after it's already been baked, right? So let's chazer what we have so far. We had this chakiva. Is it a cheftz of machalos asuros, or is it just a gzeira lest you come to Yitzhak? Then we have two machlokas. One machlokas is, do we say in mevat nisal lecharchila on bittel of milk in the bread? And another machlokas, whether you can kasher already baked bread, whether you can kasher bread that's already been baked and is already not kosher. So Rav Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha, just pointed out that both of these machlokas are talui in that chakira. It would turn out that the Shita of the Chavos Das is conceptually identical to the Shita of the Gilyan Marsha. Both of them hold that the nature of the Isser to make milchik bread is that it's a cheftza of machalos asuros. Much the same way that milk and chicken is a cheft of machalos asurus, it's inherently asur to eat. And therefore, if it's machalos asurus, you can't be mevatel in this l'chachila. And once it's asur, there's no kashering it. It's asur. The Chachmas Adam and the Nachlas Tzvi, on the other hand, view the Isra of milchig bread to be an Isra Gavra. Don't do anything that's risky. Don't do something that's going to cause you to eat this milchig bread with flesh. So, consequently, you could make it mutter even after it was already made in an Isra way. You can now fix it. And it's also not subject to any vatnas l'chachila, because it's not technically iser. It's only on the gavra. It's not a chefza of iser. What if you bought bread and you didn't realize that it was milchig bread, and you used it? You made a challah kugel in your oven with your own kelim, with your kugel dish and whatever. So now do you need to kasha your kitchen? Do you need to kasha your kitchen? You need to kasher your kitchen, or at least the things that came in contact with the milk and bread. So what's your taina? Same chakira, right? If it's a chefza shel machalos asuros, yeah, it's a problem. If it's not a chefza of machalos asuros, it's just an issue in the gavra. You got to be careful. Well, you know, don't eat this with. So it's not a chefza of machalos asuros, then it wouldn't be a problem. Very similar. You have a similar machlokas rishonim. Just a second. You have a similar machlokas rishonim when it comes to kashrin kalim that had bishul akum. If let's say you get the shiloh all the time, someone just texted me this week, came home and the housekeeper. This person refers to their housekeeper as their goita. The goita had cooked noodles in our pot. Right, in kosher noodles. We only have kosher food in our house. She put anything in it. Nothing non kosher in it. But she cooked pasta in our pot. Do we need to kasher the pot or not? So what do you taina? So most people are unaware that it's machlokas rishonim. Both yesh omrims are quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch quotes both yesh omrims. And when the Shulchan Aruch quotes a yesh omrim and a yesh omrim, the halacha is like the second one. And the second one is that yes, you do need to kasher your pot. So the pashtus is, unless you have some good heter, pashtus is it should need kashering. So it is a machlokas rishonim. What is that machlokas rishonim about? So l'chora, the same thing. Is bishul akum a chefza shel iser? Or is bishul akum not a chefza shel iser? It's a din in the gavra. Mori Rabbi Shachter just lemaisa, he's machmir about the bishul akum one, and he says you definitely do have to kasher your kelim. You know, the halacha is it would be mutter b'diavad, right? So I said, is it b'diavad? He said, no, the food is b'diavad. You could eat the food. that would be mutter b'diavad. If there was sniffim lahakel, you know, that you could, because that's already been made. But to use the pot again is not b'diavad. That's called the chachila, to then use the pot again. But if Shachter Shlita was makel with dairy bread, he did not think that you need to kasher your utensils for dairy bread. So he split the psak between what we say by bishul akum and what we say by milchig bread.
Yeah. Would the heter b'diavad apply? Like, let's say someone didn't even know
halacha,
used the pot again to make something.
So now it's
b'diavad. Yeah. How come dairy bread is different? Isn't it still dairy though? So why is it different than the other dairy?
No, we're talking about the kelim.
So, you use kelim for the dairy bread,
huh? Dairy. Because do kelim become treif? Because dairy bread is inherently treif. Okay, now some halachos related to dairy bread. Let's say you cook dairy bread in a flesh, not dairy bread, you cook bread, baked bread, you don't cook bread, you bake bread in a flesh of gavin. So the Ramah talks about this. The Ramah talks about that a person shouldn't bake bread in an oven together with pashtida, which is some type of meat pie, like a little barek or something, because you're worried that some of the meat juice is going to drip out of the pie and hit the bread, and then it's going to make it fleishig bread. And fleishig bread is also asr, right? Because you might eat fleishig bread with cheese. So that's also asr. Even if it became fleishig by accident, just like we spoke about something that even became milchig by accident, it's also going to be asr. Shulchan Aruch and Sif Beis says that if you smear fat on the walls of the oven and then you bake bread in the oven, the bread is fleishig, and therefore you're not allowed to bake bread in an oven until you kasher it. If there was fat smeared on the oven, it would need to be kashered. So that's as far as a fleshiga oven. So you shouldn't bake bread in a fleshiga oven if you wouldn't bake milk in that oven. When can you bake milk in the oven? That was yesterday's shiur, right? So that was the different shitos in terms of that. What about cakes? Are you allowed to have milch cakes? So the Pesachei Tshuva in Sifkat and Gimel quotes a Maharit and the Chacham Sadam that the issue of making milch bread only applies to bread that would normally be eaten with meat. But cake is typically not eaten with meat. Cake is eaten as dessert. And even though we're nohig not to eat milchig after fleshig either, but nevertheless, that wasn't the gezeira over here. The gezeira of milchig bread was that you might make a pastrami sandwich or something like that. The issue of eating meat and dairy together is much more serious than the issue of having one after the other, as we've discussed, right? So it's mutter to make dairy cakes and danishes, and that's why you'll have from bakeries with good hashgachas that make cheese danishes and cakes that are milchig. Just on late in the afternoon on Tisha B'Av, my nieces dropped by my house and left us a cake and and also like this garlic bread type of thing, and they wrote on the pack on the bag, both very milchig. Right? So why was that okay? Because the cake was okay because it was cake, and the garlic bread kind of thing was okay because it looked really weird. It was a very unusual bread. I wasn't even sure what it was. Like, is that a bread? Is that somebody? Yeah, it's like you know, like something you'd have at the pizza shop that you dip in the sauce or something, you know, like at a higher end pizza shop, I guess, or something like that. So that's permissible to do because it's weird enough. Now, what about printing the word dairy on the package? Putting the letter D on the package. Someone sent me yesterday WhatsApp a picture of face masks, a package of face masks, and it had on the bottom OUD. I have no idea. No idea why it needs an OU and how a D ended up on the package. But a package of face masks with an OUD. But what about putting a dairy on the package? As Chavis Das says, that you're not allowed to add a siman to the dairy bread after it was already baked, right? We already had this discussion. Once it's already baked, can you do anything about it? There is a Tshuva Sefer called Evan Yisrael. And the Tshuva's Evan Yisrael in Chelik Tes, Siman Samach Dalet, Masha Sha'al, Mama Hani Masha Kosvin Matfisin, Al Ha'ugot Shein Chalaviot, Harekvar Nesumei Kara, the Eich Yutru Acharkach, Moshe Kosvin Chavzdasu Piskechuva. Once it's Aser, how could you possibly be matter it afterwards? So he writes to the Shoel, Hine She'elaso Tamuakzas. I am confused by your question. V'lomelo Hikshal Masha Hutr Bechaticha Katana. You look at the Gemara doesn't say you're not allowed to bake dairy bread. It says ein lashin, right? That was the brisa in Maseches Pesachim. What was the lashin? I mean, I have it right here. Ein lashin es ha'isa b'chalav. But everyone agrees you are allowed to be lush es ha'isa b'chalav as long as you make it ke'ein tura afterwards. I became master. He says, what must be is that maybe you're not allowed to kasher it afterwards. But maybe if your initial kavana when you made it was with the plan of cutting it into a unique shape or cutting it down to size or something like that, maybe all would agree that you're allowed to do. Because it's built into the Isser. The Isser is Ein Lashin. And then the very next line, the Gemara says that if you make a Kain Tura, that's fine. Why? Why is it okay? It's already Isser. No, it's not already Isser. Because when you were Lush, you already were planning on making it Kain Tura. The Kol Kavana, Sachav Zdas, Emati Yisak, and Vyasa Chatichus Ketanos, that's when you were having Kavana not to bake it in that way. But if your kavanah b'shas lisha was to do this, then it's fine. V'achanami im kavanah lahadik mabekos ha'le'ugos shehein chalaviot mahani. And therefore he suggests, the Tshuvas Evan Yisrael, I'm not sure who it is, suggests that you're allowed to bake a dough and just put a tag in the dough. Because as long as that says that, put a tag in the bread that says that it's milchig, because that's enough of an indication. Meaning, because that's your kavana meikara. As long as it's your kavana meikara, that's okay. Rav Salvechik held that putting dairy on the package also was perfectly fine based on that same idea that that the Isser is not an Isser Cheftza. He thought that we pass that it's an Isser Gavra, not an Isser Cheftza of Macholos Asuros. And it used to be that reliable Hashkach agencies would rely on Salvechik's opinion. The story goes that there was a major Rosh Yeshiva. Different versions of the story identify different people who it may have been, but that there was a major Rosh Yeshiva who came home during lunchtime once, and his wife had made him a salami sandwich for lunch, and he discovered after eating lunch that the bread that his wife served him a salami sandwich on it was dairy. And the company just relied on Salvechik's opinion that putting D on the package is good enough. And he was unhappy about that when he discovered that there could be such a thing and that there is such a shita. And that's when all the Ashkach agencies changed over and they no longer rely on that. That if even a Gavra Rabba could be Nichshel, so you can imagine other people would be Nichshel as well. If you made dairy bread for one day, which you're allowed to do, and then you had some left over, you weren't as hungry as you thought. Does that now make it Asur? Because now it's more than one day. Do you have to throw it all out? So there's a Tshuva Sefer I mentioned before, V'darashta V'chakarta. So in the Tshuva Sefer V'darashta V'chakarta, Chelek He, Simon He, he writes, he says, Hatam shelo nesa lechem shenishar b'suda b'sarit, shenasa b'sari, ki lo gozru rak al pas sholim. Wow. He says, as long as it's not a full loaf of bread that's left over, it's fine. Because once people see that the bread has been cut, they'll ask about it. Because you're not just going to eat a piece of bread that looks like it's already been cut up. So you're going to inquire about it, and that's good enough. Okay? That's how the Tshuvas V'Darashta V'Chakarta suggests. What about a vegetarian? Can a vegetarian bake dairy bread in large amounts without a simen? What's the svara? He's never going to eat meat. Or what about during the 9 days? Oh, so maybe gavra chefza? If it's an isser chefza, it's a problem. If it's an isser gavra, it's not a problem. You could argue that even if it's an isser gavra, it's still a problem. Why? Because A, you might not be the only one that eats it. B, someone might make a siyum during the 9 days. Rav Shechter in his shiur yesterday, that I was listening to the first part of it yesterday about Rav Kook, said that Rav Kook was the apple of the Netziv's eye. The Netziv loved Rav Kook. He was a Talmud of his. He loved him. He loved Rav Kook. In fact, in Valazhin, the tefillin. You were not allowed to wear tefillin all day because it's Yuara. Who do you think you are that you're going to wear tefillin all day? And the Tziv only gave special permission to Rav Kook because he was a Kaddush. So someone in that level of Kedusha, he was allowed to wear tefillin all day. So he said that after Rav Kook had already left the yeshiva and he took a Rabbanah somewhere, he once came to visit the yeshiva, and it was during the 9 days that he came to visit the yeshiva, and the Tziv said, to be mekabel talmud chacham like this is a sudas mitzvah, and we had fleishik during the 9 days.
No siyum.
They just that fleishik in honor of the nitziv, fleishik in honor of being mekabel Rav Kook. Yeah, Rav Kook has a thing about vegetarians, but the nitziv had fleishik in honor of reading Rav Kook. I never heard that story before. It seems pretty unbelievable that would qualify as a sudas mitzvah. Rav Shechter said when he met Rabbi Ruderman in Baltimore, Rabbi Ruderman commented to him that history wasn't so nice to Rav Kook, that people don't appreciate what a gon and a kadosh and a tahor he was, that people politicize everything, so they don't realize, is one of those things. I think David Bashefkin once had a tweet about the things that modern Orthodox people love to tell Yeshivish people, right? Who is Rav Eliyashiv's Masada Kiddushin? Rav Kook, right? That's one of those things that people love to brag about, right? So Rav Kook was Rav Eliyashiv's Masada Kiddushin, Shatchan also. So what about the vegetarian? So or during 9 days? So the Sefer Ol Yaakov quotes from a few poskim that vegetarians are also not allowed to bake milchi bread. because the Isra has nothing to do with the baker himself. Meaning, if you say it's an Isra Chefza, it's problematic. And also, you don't know that he's going to be the only one that eats it. Marsham in the Chuvin Chelik Zayin Simnayin Vav asks dairy bread during the 9 days because maybe you'll have a siyum or something like that. I saw in Badei Shulchan he quotes this. In Badei Shulchan in the Biurim, he also says like this. Two more issues. Issue number one, tasting. The Badei Shulchan in Sivkat and Vav quotes from a crazy place that if you baked bread with milk, this is wild. He says, V'yesha kasav. Even if you tasted it and there was no detectable taste of milk, it's still going to be asur because you're going to come to be matar even when it does have a tam chalav. But the Ashulchan says that, wait a second, we learned that the mechaber relies on ti'imas kfeila. Remember, right? The mechaber relies by basar b'chalav. By basar b'chalav. What does the mechaber rely on? A non-Jew will taste and say, I don't taste any milch again. And even the Rama relies on a Sephardi. So someone is allowed to taste it and tell you it doesn't taste like anything. And now when it comes to milch bread, we're going to be more machmir and say that even if you taste it and there's nothing in it, so, or let someone else taste it. So he says now, because most people are unaware that milchik bread is asr, that you're not allowed to eat milchik bread even independently without any meat. They don't know about this isr. So we're worried, we have to make extra chumas, because we're worried that a person will get confused. And, you know, a person might say, I'll make sure to eat it with dairy, which is still asr, because you're not allowed to eat it at all. However, Badei Shulchan points out that most poskim argue, and they do allow you to taste the bread, and if the bread doesn't have any dairy flavor, then you're allowed to eat it even together with meat. So if you know that there's shishim in the dough against the milk, the bread is going to be mutter. Meaning it's batel shishim. If you know that there isn't shishim against the milk, then the bread is aser, and if you're not sure, then you can taste. That's what Badei Shulchan writes. The problem with that is, how in the world are you allowed to taste it? Meaning, if it might be Yasser, how can you possibly taste it? So what's the answer? Meaning, what's the answer?
That
you what? Yeah, but the whole bread is still, I don't know, I don't think you could do that. Even if it's in a segavri, now that I have little bits of it, if you cut it down into smaller portions, it doesn't sound like that's what he's talking about. Maybe it's something to Rabban Lakula. Meaning, if you know that it's more than shishim, so then you can't taste it. If you know that it's less than shishim, you don't even need to taste it. But if it's you're not sure, so maybe it's something to Rabban Lakula. The Badei Shulchan discusses this also, that maybe you can rely on something to Rabban Lakula, and that's what they're relying on with the taste.
A chicken would never say that you're allowed to taste it on your own.
Even though it's something about the cool. Yeah, so Badei Shulchan points out that problem. Yeah.
So even practically, it seems that like when you're doing this, it's also like why I understand that why would the extra chumas here? Because it brings more awareness
to the fact that there's this.
Yeah. And also like if you're having somebody taste the nature's military bread, even if everybody, all the parties in the situation know that it's usher, it brings more awareness. So you'll make sure the other person tasting it isn't meat.
Right.
Make sure that he knows this is dairy.
Okay. Good. So maybe that's it. Yeah.
Can you say it's a state sticker? Because on the one hand, you don't know if the milk is there, plus what you should never treat him when everything comes to you with meat.
So that's what they suggest also, but the Shulchan brings up that svara also, Sfek Sveika. He says the other poskim say that the second suffix is not really a suffix, because Chazal made a formal gzeira that you're not allowed to have milchik bread. So once it's milchik bread, you can't say, oh, but suffix, I might not eat it with meat. It's a gzeira that you're not allowed to have it even independently. Last issue, Thomas's English muffins. This was a major issue for the Orthodox Union. Yeah.
Only if you do it in a weird enough way, or a
Yeah, there's no iser bishul per se, but what are you cooking it for if you don't want to eat it? So Thomas's English muffins were a complicated sugya for the OU. It's the only dairy bread that the OU gave the hechsher for English muffins. And what's the svara? They're round, they're unique, they don't look like regular bread, so it's an unusual shape. An English muffin comes portioned, right? So it comes in portion sizes. Although that one's a little harder. It's a more difficult cooler to rely on. Why? Because you have a gigantic package of 12 of them and you keep them in the freezer and they'll last for 6 months, you know, for a year, you know, till next Pesach. So it's hard to rely on that. I mean, the whole idea of portioned was that you'll forget, you're not going to forget by the time you eat it. Rav Schechter pointed out that today the English muffin shape is so common that it's hard to call it a unique shape anymore. Meaning, the Heimische brands didn't like the fact that the OU was being made on dairy English muffins, so they started making part of English muffins. So it's no longer a unique shape that screams milchit to you. Because the other, you know,
now you... on purpose to...
No, because they held it wasn't okay. Meaning they held it wasn't right.
They didn't do it just to mess up.
No, I don't think they did it just to mess up, although it served that purpose. So the answer is that the OU still feels that they could do it because it's batel b'shishim. So why does the OU market as dairy? If it's not dairy, it's batel b'shishim. So the OU holds like the, what we quoted before, the atzei ola, that you're not allowed to be mevatel the milk l'chachila. If milk falls into a mixture, you can add flour and water to be mevatel the milk, but you're not allowed to intentionally add milk into a mixture knowing that it's going to be batel b'shishim. So the OU still marks it as dairy, even though technically it isn't, because you're not allowed to eat those English muffins with meat because the milk inside of it was put there on purpose. But they don't go so far as to ask for the bread based on the mevatelness of the chachila, because there is also the opinion that's makel to be mevatel the milk b'shishim, even the chachila. Right? We have that opinion that it's an iser gavra, not an iser chefza, and therefore it wouldn't be a problem. So they're based on that. They do rely on bittel. That's what Rabbi Ganak explained to me once, that the reason the OU Thomas's English muffins are okay, kosher is that they're relying on bittel, and as a snifla hakel, it's still somewhat of an unusual shape. You still have that as a snifla hakel. So between those two things, I would bet that if it wasn't always milchik, that they wouldn't. I mean, if the shaila came up today, probably wouldn't be. They probably wouldn't go for it. That's my own commentary. But this was this company was grandfathered in with old Cheetos, and and it would be unfair of the OU to come to Thomas's and say, you've done nothing different, nothing wrong, and we're just taking away the Ashkacha. Like, that's hard to do. So they're willing to rely on these shifas.
They also have the Rav to rely on, because they're
something very little. And the Rav to rely on, which the OU, meaning the OU used to go to the Rav for all the Piskei Halacha. So they have that as well.
You say that everyone knows in this moment that they are there. Even
its shape. I don't know, everyone knows? Yeah? The world knows?
I mean, I don't know.
That sounds like a technical hat.
I was thinking something about cakes. Cakes aren't necessarily a very different shape, right?
Meaning, you could have people eat English muffins with meat. Goyim eat English muffins with meat. Right? Goyim eat meat for breakfast. That's why Dunkin' Donuts has like bacon, because guys want bacon for breakfast, right? So they'll put an English muffin and egg and strips of bacon. No, you never saw in a commercial sizzling bacon on an English muffin bag. Looks disgusting, but they like it.
Apparently.
Really? Okay, so it looks good. So maybe that's why people like it. So yeah, okay, that's our spiel on milchig bread. Tomorrow maybe we'll.